everyone, to another episode of the Man of Spike podcast. I'm your host, Eric Cias. With me, as always, are my wonderful co-hosts, Jay Anquetil.
Hey, how's it going?
Adrian Lopez.
Hey, how's it going?
And William Hendricks.
I'm going on strike because we were not allowed to keep the original introduction.
Okay.
How's it going?
So how are you guys doing this week?
What original introduction?
One where he was referred to as Jadrian Lopez. The, like, amalgamation. It's either, I don't know what it is. Like, is it a fusion of Jay and Adrian? Or is Jadrian, like, Adrian's, like, street name?
We're an XY.
Pokemon. Remember a few weeks ago when I called Adrian AJ on accident?
Adrian.
AJ Adrian. Well,
I mean, I get it. I understand. It's really difficult to read the names as they're just kind of listed in order on the Skype screen.
Oh.
It is. It's tough.
Why did you refer to yourself first, then? You should be last. It's rude to always introduce yourself first.
Okay, well then, why don't you introduce me, Jadrian?
Okay. Welcome to the Mad Spy Podcast. With me, as always, is Eric Cias.
That was terrible.
That was good.
No, not even close.
Haters.
They hate us because they ain't us.
Did you say anus?
Yes.
Don't say that word. That's bad. Banned for radio.
Banned for anus. All right, so what's going on, guys? How was your weekend? What did you guys do? What have you been up to? Give me the 411. I've been out. I was out of town all weekend. I'll get to my stuff later, don't worry, but I want to know what you guys did.
I played a lot of Modern this week, last week. I don't know, I got to go to a Modern tournament in like a kind of a nearby city. It's not a very big city, it's real small. I'm just kidding, El Paso's huge. And I had a blast, because there was like, It was really cool to play in like an actual Modern tournament. Usually Modern for us around here is like 7 or 8 people that we scrounge together and hopefully get somebody to come and we'll give them a loaner deck and yay, we get to play Modern, or you get to proxy stuff to play a non-sanctioned Modern tournament. But no, we actually got to play Modern and it was awesome. I had a blast. I played the Merfolk. The Merfolks took me to a top 4. So I was super happy. I like Merfolk. And then Friday, I actually played Standard, and I played Red-White, and I won again, and that was nice. I like Red-White aggro. And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
That honestly sound like, I mean this in the least offensive way possible, that sounded like a 6-year-old, like, reading their presentation in class about why they like Magic the Gathering. They're like, I like Magic. I like Red-White aggro. My favorite cards are Goblin Battle Master and Monastery Mentor. My dad says I'm the best Magic player in town.
I don't know.
That part, too. You nailed it. You got it down, man. That part at the end of the presentation. And you, like, stammer because you're in front of people. There's that, like, cute girl in the back that eats paste all the time. And you're like, saliva in your mouth. You're like, what? I hope she likes my magical cards. You got it down, man. That's the best post-Oscar
I have
seen yet.
Pure content coming from these lips, yo. Mad content. I don't know. Go, Jay.
All right. So I also went to play in the Modern tournament with Adrian, and that was in El Paso at Sun City, right? That's what that place is called? Not El Paso, the shop. It's Sun City? Yeah. Well,
you could also call El Paso the Sun City.
We played at Sun City in Sun City at night when the sun was gone. So, but anyway, I just threw together a deck because I didn't have a Modern deck ready when it was go time, but I did surprisingly well with it and smashed some faces and got 9th place just out of top 8. So a little disappointing, but I still had a lot of fun and it was homebrew. I didn't have the highest hopes, but it was pretty good and did some trading and just some more teaching and playing a lot of Modo. So, all in all, pretty good weekend for Magic.
I am awfully close. I'm a couple of cards away from my, like, reshaped cube, I guess. I'm kind of, like, restructuring so that I can facilitate some more strategies. So it's like, cube management is, like, honestly harder than it ought to be, but I feel like if you let cube get stagnant and you don't ever change cards, then, like, you miss... Like, you miss one of the joys of that format, which is how it's, like, actually fluid and changes, as opposed to just, like, it's the same cube forever and ever and ever.
Well, I went to Lubbock this weekend to play in the final PTQ of the season. And that means that this is the final PTQ ever. And it was pretty cool because Lubbock actually got a record turnout. They had 105 players, which is the most players they've ever had for a PTQ. So big ups to them for getting such a huge turnout. I decided to play the Abzan midrange / control deck, the one that doesn't play Caryatid, and I did really bad. So what happened was I got paired up against blue-black control round one, and we play a long, grindy game, game one, and I end up taking it down in game one. In game two, he beats me fairly quickly as I don't draw any land, and he just drops Silumgar and applies a lot of pressure and counters every single one of my threats. So in game three, we only have about 3 minutes left, or no, about 10 minutes left, and I try and start playing fast because I want to try and take it down, because I know that the matchup that I have with my board would have been really good because I just bring in a bunch of planeswalkers and a bunch of threats. I just have to make sure I get land. So I look at my opening seven, and I keep a hand that has two siege rhinos, two lands, and three other spells. And I figure there's two lands and two siege rhinos. I gotta go with it. I proceed to not draw any lands until turn five. So I'm already three turns without a land drop. And by that point, it's too late. So he does the same thing to me and is actually able to beat me in the last turn of turns when we go to turns. So I start out with a loss, and then I get a draw in round two, and then I get another loss in round three. And at that point, I just dropped because the bracket that I was in was not very good. And then my deck just was, I didn't test it. I hadn't tested that deck. Even though I've been playing variations of Abzan, I hadn't tested this particular one. And I just thought that I play with a lot of these cards anyway. I should know how the deck works. Apparently without carry added, it's a lot different when you're not relying on drawing a mana creature or, you know, only playing with 26 lands and not, I don't know. I just felt like I should have taken red-white, which is what I had been playing the couple of weeks before. So I think I made the wrong deck choice.
I don't think you should be switching, like, decks. Like, what, I don't know. You seem to be getting, like, I don't know. I think red-white, you finally found your deck for the format. I don't think you should have slot, man. You shouldn't have done it. You should have held true to that red-white Boros, and you would have gone X and three instead of X2 drop.
Yeah, I got punished for it, but the reason why I played Abzan was because in the 2 weeks leading up to the tournament, I decided to test red-white, and my buddy Matt decided to start testing this Abzan deck. And we were discussing everything, our findings and everything during our testing, and he had really, really sold me on playing this deck, so I decided I was going to play this deck. Just because I felt like the red-white deck wasn't going to be good against the green devotion decks. Because there's not a lot of, we talked about it last week, there's not a lot of removal that they have for it, so I felt like Abzan would have been a lot better. But, you know, I think it just, I just need a little bit more time with the deck. I think the deck is very good. I just need a little bit more time with it. So, the next big thing I have coming up are a few, GPTs for Vegas, as well as another PPTQ, and finally the regional PTQ in April, so I will be grinding really hard in Standard for that. But, I mean, overall, I still had a lot of fun because I met a couple of people who actually listened to the podcast, and I got to travel with some people I hadn't traveled before. So I traveled with Victor Bitter, who I've actually never traveled with, even though I play with him a lot, I test with him a lot. I just never had a chance to travel with him. I also traveled with my friend Josh, and I also traveled with Jesse Hernandez, who won the PPTQ in El Paso just a couple weeks ago. And it was my first time traveling with him, and he actually listens to the podcast as well. So it was pretty cool. We all scrubbed out of the PPTQ, and then out of the PTQ, and then Victor entered the PPTQ that happened immediately after, which was at 7 o'clock that evening. The rest of us decided to go eat, and a few of us and a couple of other people decided to go to the strip club after that. So overall, the trip was pretty fun. There was a lot of bonding and a lot of fun being had, so it was cool. So that's what I did.
Are we just going to ignore the fact that he went to a strip club after a Magic tournament? I like
that. Oh, yeah.
I assume that it's just a lot of built-up tension.
What's wrong with going to a strip club?
Hanging out with your bros all the time. It's just at some point, you just, you know.
I have done it, too. I've gone to a club after playing Magic.
There's nothing wrong with it. It happens sometimes.
Never done it. It happens sometimes like it's an accident.
When you've been
like
playing as long as I have.
You guys are driving around looking for a Chili's. And
no,
then you
I
just...
mean, that was the actual plan. The actual plan was go to a strip club. Like, we didn't happen to come across a strip club. We were like, dinner and then strip club. That's the plan.
Dinner and then... like it.
I guess I've never, like, sat there, slung some spells, and then, you know, been like, I really need to go to a strip club after this.
I don't know. It was cool. It was fun. But anyway, that was my weekend. I will be doing a lot of testing standard in the coming weeks up until the pre-release, and then testing even harder after that. So I'll be playing a lot of Magic. I'll have a lot more discussion for you guys. But I didn't get to see any of the sweet coverage, so we'll get into that in a moment. But Adrian, you actually shared a video with us that you wanted to discuss. So let's discuss that real quick.
All right. Well, I did. Somebody had just posted on Reddit and in the Magic TCG thread, and it was just like something along the lines of like Louis Scott Vargas posted this video like 3 years ago. I don't know. It was posted in December 15, 2011. And I kind of got curious, so I took a listen. That doesn't seem right. I pressed my ear up against my speaker.
Just keep going. You're fine.
I took a listen to the... That sounds so weird to say. Is that what I'm supposed to say?
You're really struggling to get to your point.
Yeah, I'm having a hard
time.
You
keep
time.
Like stepping on. You can't. You're in traffic and you keep pressing on the brake. You need to just continue to drive. Everybody is behind you. Like, dude, just stop.
Go. Just take the intersection. Okay. Anyways, I took a listen to Luis Scott Vargas's video on Channel Fireball, and he said something along the lines of, "Don't confuse the will to win with being an unpleasant opponent." The way to be a pro is to be a complete, or the way to be a pro is not to be a complete rules lawyer or being hostile to your opponent. So, I actually really, really like this quote because even though you're a spike, and I know, I mean, if you're listening to this podcast, chances are you're probably a spike, and I know all four of us are pretty damn spiky, that doesn't mean you have to be an asshole. Being competitive is not being an asshole. I don't know, like, I think, from playing competitive Magic, I've learned to take losses with a little bit more grace than I used to. Kind of now, like even like losing in top four, and Eric can attest to it. Like I was bummed out, but I mean, at the end of the day, Magic has variance in it, and you can't always be in control of the variance. And I don't know. I love the game, but I also if you love the game, you got to be okay with losing. That's just the way it is. You can't win every single game of Magic you play. Do you guys have any thoughts on like on this whole thing?
Yeah, so I'll share some thoughts. I really like that you shared this with us, Adrian, because this is exactly what we're about as a podcast and as members of the community in general. We want to be able to share this game that we love with everyone and not come off as like mean or douchebags or scumbags or anything like that. And the way that you handled your loss at the PPTQ was very, very well. You took it in stride. You were laughing afterwards and, you know, still showing that you were having a good time. That was a really great discipline on your part, because I was there to see it judging that event. Now, when I moved back to El Paso and I decided that I wanted to be kind of like a mainstay in the community and a staple and having a bigger voice, having this podcast, I made it an effort to kind of adjust some of my, I guess, interactions with people or how I interact with people whenever I win or lose. And I know that now I don't necessarily like overhype up whenever I win a tough match against someone that I don't think I can beat or anything like that. You know, I make sure that I'm very, you know, mellow and you know, take my wins about the same as I take my losses. I don't even tilt anymore when I take my losses. I just, you know, I take my lumps and I shake their hand and I say good games. And even though I'm upset that I've lost, like at the PTQ this past weekend, I did really bad. And, you know, I drew one round and then lost two other rounds. Like, I didn't win a single round. So it was very demoralizing. But I can guarantee you that any of my opponents that I played would say that I took my lumps, you know, and I took it in stride. And, you know, I even talked to a couple of them afterwards.
His lovely lady lumps. Sorry.
I was trying to make a point here, Adrian.
I'm sorry. It was too easy.
So I don't display any hostility, and I don't necessarily try and rules lawyer people. I just try and play the game right and correct and to the best of my ability. And I make sure that my opponent's doing the same thing. And that's all I really do. And so I hope that the people that are listening to this kind of take this. We're going to link the YouTube video so you can listen to this section of the interview. I hope that the people listening to this get a chance to watch and actually understand what's going on, because there are a lot of people right now that are playing this game that don't understand that they don't have to be jerks when they're playing an opponent, whenever they beat them or whenever they lose. And it happens all too often. And I'm sure, Will, you see it a lot as a judge. You've been judging a lot longer than I have. How many times have you seen this and you just don't like say anything?
There's a graph, like an illustration that somebody has made previously that some of you might have seen, and I've seen it plenty of times before, but it basically, it depicts like, kind of like how much of a jerk you are and like what your actual skill level is, kind of like versus perceived skill level. And the idea is that when you get to like the professional level, like kind of what LSB is saying in this video is that like nobody who's that good succeeds by being a jerk to everyone, because then nobody associates with them. But you do see a lot of players in that kind of like on the cusp phase where they're like certainly better than the average player, but they're not good enough to necessarily like regularly make the pro tour. And they've kind of like adopted this attitude that like, and it's really easy when you play a game with variance in it to just kind of assume that like, you know that you're better than the average player. So you kind of assume that you're better than everybody else, which is not always the case. Like sometimes you're better than most of the people in the room, but that doesn't mean you're actually the best player in the room. And so like, you just expect to beat everybody. And so there's a positive side of this where, like, you go into Magic and you want, like, you expect that you should be able to win every game. But, like, there's a negative side where people just kind of, you know, I guarantee that, like, everyone's played against a player like that. Like, they expect to be able to beat you. And if they're not beating you, like, their demeanor completely changed. Like, they have a really negative attitude. And, you know, they're just completely unpleasant to play against because they just expected to win and they're not winning.
I was that player. I will admit wholeheartedly, I was that player a few years ago. That was me. But as I've grown up, I've matured a little bit and I don't take this game that seriously anymore, to where I feel like it's like life or death and I have so much riding on it. But yeah, I completely attest to the fact that I used to be that way.
To me, like, I feel like there's kind of, like, there's a couple of different ways that you can address that. I think that, like, one of the things that you can do is you can just kind of, like, accept that it's a game, or, like, accept that there's variance in the game, or that there are things that are outside of your control, or whatever it may be, but just understanding that you're going to lose sometime, and that has to be okay. Like, you might not like it at first, but, like, you need to be okay with that, because if you're not okay with that, then you should you should play chess. You should just play a game with no variance involved or something. But like, if you can't handle those swings with any like any modicum of grace, then you can't play a game with variance. And the other thing that a lot of those people at that group need to understand is that they aren't actually as good as the pro players, and there are a lot of players, it's just like you have the attitude that like you should beat everybody, but you are not as good as you think you are. Like, you could be the best player in the room, but you could be marginally better than everybody else in the room, and that doesn't mean that you're going to just consistently win. Like, if somebody like who is that good, like if Luis Scott Vargas or like Paul Cheon, or despite Eric's suggestions to the contrary, PVD, play in tournaments and don't just like flip tables when they lose to people, then there's nothing to justify your sort of behavior. Like, if somebody who is definitely better than you can conduct themselves that way, then there's no reason why, like, if you're the PTQ grinder, when like somebody spikes a game on you, that you need to be a little shit about it. Like, you are not as good as you think you are.
Kind of comes down to the whole, like, there's always somebody better than you. There's always going to be somebody better at the game than you. But, excuse me. One second.
Well, while you're doing whatever you're doing, I just wanted to jump in real quick and say you're absolutely right, Adrian. And Will brought up a lot of great points, too. I actually had to have a discussion with one of my friends recently, because a couple of weeks ago at game day, he blew up in top 8. Just like went way past the point of tilting to actually just like yelling at someone. And you know, he's a friend of mine and he associates himself with me, and it was really, really bad. Like, people were asking me questions like, is he like this normally? And I said, no, he's not. So I actually had to talk to him and be like, hey, you know what? People are saying some stuff, and you know, I've changed a lot about my demeanor and how I play and how I take my losses and stuff like that. You need to do the same thing because you're associating yourself with me, and I don't want to associate myself with people who are going to be bashing other people for playing a game. You know, that's not why people are here to play. And he understood and he apologized to me, and I think that moving forward he's going to address it and be better about it. But definitely sometimes things need to be said to people for them to kind of understand, like, how they're treating other people, how they're acting in matches. And even though he has the will to win, at that moment in time, he was definitely being an unpleasant opponent.
Like, to me, it's so, like, I don't know if this is, like, how other people have rationalized in the past, but, like, when I got frustrated when playing, to me, like, the thought process that I took was basically that, like, it's so easy when you play a game like this to, like, completely internalize like all of your thought process and all the things you do. So like, you learn as much as you individually can about cards and matchups and metagames, and you pay attention to like everything that you do. And like, you're all doing this in the interest of becoming a better player, but it's all like really, really self-absorbed. And then at some point you're sitting at the table and you realize that like, you're playing against somebody else, and this is not solitaire, and like, you've completely missed this entire other dynamic of the game because you're only considering it from your perspective. And it's like, you know, even as a competitive player, like, when you get out of that, I just only care about what I do, you actually get better because you pay attention to what your opponent does. But like, you also understand that, like, for the most part, that like, you have to understand that there are things that are more important than like you individually winning the game. And like, you can be a competitor and you can be fierce. But like, one of the dynamics, like, you know, you talk a lot about like playtesting and finding somebody who playtests better than you. If you're a little shit, then nobody's going to want to playtest with you, and you're going to lose. Like, it's going to happen. Even if you're the best player on the planet, you're going to like mulligan to three sometimes, and like, when that happens, you like, it sucks and it's really frustrating, and it's really frustrating when you're like, you know, you're in your winning end, and then suddenly your deck decides that, you know, like, it's gonna cut out early before you get a chance to. But you know, like, the way that you conduct yourself with your losing, and as Eric mentioned, the way that you conduct yourself when you're winning has a lot to do with what happens in Magic outside of the game itself. And those things are frequently just as important because, like, you could be the best player in the world and nobody will play test with you and nobody, you know, nobody wants to loan you cards and nobody wants to, like, you know, scout for you or scoop to you in a tournament. And then it doesn't matter. Like, you'd be the best player in the world and you're never going to get anywhere because you've missed that, like, other dimension of the game.
So I want to hop in real quick, like, while you're saying that. As Magic the Gathering is a very social game. I mean, because, first of all, you're sitting in front of your opponent. You're playing against somebody. You're also going to a tournament where there's tons of people there, and et cetera, et cetera. Like, the social interaction part is really important. And I think finding a group of people to play with is even more important because there's a lot of decks I would not be able to play or a lot of tournaments I would not be able to go to if I didn't have the, like the group of friends that I have now playing this game. Like, I'm sure that if I was like, if I needed a deck, like I'm like, Eric, I am going to a Star City Open, but I'm going to play Legacy. I need to help. Can you help me acquire the cards for Legacy? Like, I bet you he would help me. But I mean, you gotta definitely remember that there's a human aspect to the game. And like Will was saying, but, another thing is like looking at like professional, records, like, if you guys ever watch, like, the Pro Tour coverage and stuff, they'll show percentages of like, or win-loss percentages of these professional players. And a good Pro Tour, like, competitor is somebody who's sitting at, like, above, like, 58% or something like that. Am I correct on that? Because I remember seeing that, and, like, they were showing real big-name players. And, like, they were... They're not winning like 80 to 90% of the time. They're winning 50 to 60% of the time. And yeah, that's
the reality of that competitive level is that you can't, like, nobody goes to the Pro Tour and has like a lifetime win rate on the Pro Tour of like 80% or 75%. Like, if you're in the 60s, you are amazing because, like, even winning, like, consistently winning more than half of your games at a Pro Tour makes you a very, very good Magic player. And, like you're saying, if you lose, like, if you win 60% of your matches at the Pro Tour and you lose 40% of them, you're very likely to be a consistent regular. Like, you're the kind of player that's, like, you know, not, you know, day twoing. You're the kind of player that could actually threaten on your good runs. You threaten for a spot. But if you lose 40% of the time, like, you got to be able to handle your losses too.
And I think that's the most important part of playing the game is you got to be able to deal with your slumps. Like, we talked about it last week, you know, where you get into that slump where you don't want to play anymore because you're not winning. You're finding things. And I'm more impressed with somebody who's able to play out of that than somebody who's just kind of trying to stay consistent and then just plummets. You know, like, I'm more impressed when I like when I see players who are just struggling and they can't get anywhere with the game, and then they, you know, they play through it. You got to play through those rough spots. But anyways, I think we're probably ready to move on to tournament coverage, right?
Yeah, I mean.
Oh, Jay, I forgot about Jay. Where are you, so quiet, bro?
Jeez. I mean, just act like he's not here.
There's not much I can add to this discussion. I mean, everything's been covered. You know, my perspective is that, you know, raging at the end of the day, it doesn't really help you.
It's perfectly okay.
But basically, no one is perfect, and I doubt there's a single person who's never raged over a loss. I mean, it's frustrating, and there's things outside the game that can increase the frustration, and if you rage, I mean, I think as long as it's, you know, not ever taken too far or too often, then, I mean, it's natural. You know, it's better if you don't, but sometimes it's unavoidable. I don't know what to say. I mean, it's not good. So.
No, just get as mad as you can, guys. Always throw your cards. And you'll have a great time.
Just don't take it out on the strippers afterwards, and I think, yeah, you'll be good.
Eric didn't take it out on the strippers.
Oh, yes, I did.
I'm telling on you. I'm telling your wife.
Yo, my wife's here. She knows I'm
here. You guys are whack. What the dude?
Can you, just real quick, Will posted a little statistic here. Patrick Chapin has a 54.33% Pro Tour win percentage. And he's won multiple Pro Tours or just one?
Just one.
Yeah, but still, like, I bet you the person with, like, the best win percentage in, like, a tournament would probably be, like, Shahar Shenhar at Worlds. And I think, but I'm sure he probably struggled, too.
I have a 0% loss record on the Pro Tour.
Nice. Good job. It's pretty great.
Strong.
Oh, my God. Everybody has been saying that lately around here.
What, strong?
Yeah, strong. 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 I just say, all I say is, no chill.
No chill? What does that even mean?
I don't know. I heard a freshman say it, so I figured that, like, that's the cool thing.
You heard,
like,
a freshman say it?
Yeah, so I'm assuming that's what cool kids are saying now, so I'm going to start saying, no chill. Dude, Eric, you're being no chill.
I don't even know what that means.
I don't either, but that's the fun part. We get to discover it together.
All right, well, while we're discovering that, let's discover this tournament coverage that happened over the weekend. So there were three big events that happened. There was the Star City Open in Los Angeles, the Standard Grand Prix in Memphis, and the Modern Grand Prix in Vancouver. So there's a lot of Magic being played, and I didn't see a single bit of it. So I'm going to excuse myself and let you guys talk about all of it.
Way to go, Eric. Always slacking. You're always slacking.
Bro, I was traveling the entire weekend. I couldn't watch any of it.
Did you win any Magic when you were traveling this weekend? Or?
I won something better than Magic, and that was table dances.
This is very inappropriate.
But also very true.
So, did anybody see any coverage at all this week? Because I saw lots. I saw the standard one, and I posted a picture actually onto the Star City Open. I got to watch a ridiculous board state where some guy was like at 150 life and they had like 40 creatures out on the board. It was insane. And I hate midrange. We need more control. Because we can't be having that. They need to ban midrange. It's not fair to the aggro players.
When you say, like, ban midrange, what do you mean? Like,
they need to not make midrange a thing. They should just get rid of midrange as an archetype.
How? I don't know where to start.
Just ban every card with, like, between 3 and 5 CMC. It's either, like, 1 to 2 CMC or 6 and up.
But actually,
no mid-range.
The deck that took down the Standard Open in Los Angeles was Boros Aggro. So it's showing that it belongs on top. The deck's still putting up good numbers. We have two in top 8, one by Nick Gill and one by Chad White. Chad White took down the SCG Open. And it looks like two Outpost Siege and two Chandra are starting to become more and more, like, prevalent in these deck lists. I don't know if you necessarily need both. I do like two Outpost Siege. We were testing it yesterday, I believe, with Eric on the stream, and it did pretty good having both Outpost Sieges.
Oh, man, can we talk about that real quick? Can we talk about the stream?
Yeah, sure.
Go for it.
We are now officially streaming on Mondays. Yesterday was our second stream, our first, I guess, official one. And we actually had, at one point, all four of us on there.
It's true. It was pretty fun, actually.
Yeah, it was really fun. I enjoyed myself a lot. So those of you that are listening, we are streaming every Monday at 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. So adjust your clocks to our time. That way you know what
change
I'm talking about.
Change your sleep schedule. Yeah, change all the clocks in your house so that you know when we're streaming Magic the Gathering.
Because we played Standard and Modern. It was
awesome. Add or subtract hours. That's too complicated. And then you run the risk, you know, you run the risk of being an hour early or an hour late. Just change your entire life around us.
Yep, that's what I'm asking.
So I'm going to hop back into Chad White's deck for the Boros Aggro real quick before you guys keep going. So we see some pretty major changes. We no longer see the inclusion of Ashcloud Phoenix or Soulfire Grandmaster or even Wild Slash right now in his list. I'm assuming it is probably a metagame call against all the mid-range decks because he does have two Valor Stances in the main board, and the Chandra Pyromasters are going to let him swing through like Courses of Crucifix and things like that. But he seems to have settled on the whole four Rabble, four Seeker, four Stormbreath, and three Brumos. I'm not sure because I really do like Ashcloud Phoenix, and I really do like having one of or access to one Soulfire because, I mean, Eric and Jay played. I think it was the last round of our 5-3-2-2, and we got blown out by a Soulfire Grandmaster because we just could not keep up with it. That card gets a little out of hand.
Well, we also couldn't keep up with his land draws.
Yeah, so. We also did not draw land. Who wants to take on this Naya midrange deck? Because there is so much going on here that I don't even know. It's no chill.
What do you mean?
I don't know, but I like it.
You were talking to the weirdest freshman. What is it that's so much going on here that's confusing to your freshman mind?
Because there's too much midrange. It looks... okay, I'm just going to give a quick rundown on the deck list. It's all over the place, and it looks fun, but I would never play it because it's too midrange. It's got 4 Keratids, 4 Mystics, of course. You got 4 Rabble Masters. You got your 4 Whisperwood Elementals, the guy that makes manifest tokens. Corsair of Krufix, 2 Purphoros, 2 Polychronos, 2 Shaman of the Great Hunt, an Arbor Colossus, 2 Land Hostilities to wipe your board out after you make all your stuff, 1 Shamanic Revelation. For the people who aren't familiar with Shamanic Revelation, it's a draw card for each creature you control, and then you gain 4 life for each creature you control with power 4 or greater. 2 Xenagos, 2 Elspeths, and 2 Mastery of the Unseen, which is whenever a permanent you control is turned face up, you gain 1 life for each creature you control, or its activated ability is 3 and a white, which is manifest the top card of your librario. That is a lot of stuff in this deck.
There's also 4 planeswalkers in the deck.
Yeah, like, so much going on. I think that's why he lost to Chad White, because in the finals he was just never able to get things rolling. Like, he was just struggling to get it moving.
I mean, he got second.
Yeah, what a scrub.
The deck clearly does something. I will say that, like, it is certainly the case that, like, 2 Xenagos, 2 Elspeth, 2 Purphoros, 2 Polychronos, 2 Mastery, like, I get why you don't necessarily want, like, a full Monty of End Hostilities, but I think there is something to be said that, like, the 4-drop creatures and the planeswalkers, it seems like maybe he could have gone, you know, all of one of them and none of the other one, but I don't know. They don't necessarily do the exact same thing. So I think that in, you know, he's not so fully on the creature route, although I think the natural evolution of this deck is probably to play less of that other stuff and play more, you know, maybe you come up a Shamanic Revelation. I think that card is kind of like secretly, you know, the mid-range Sphinx's Revelation in a way. So I think that, you know, people looking to play with that, I mean, obviously, like, Whisperwood Elemental is just kind of repeated grindy value. I thought the thing that was most interesting was seeing somebody do so well with Mastery of the Unseen. I think people talked about it, like, as a cute thing, but I don't know if anyone really expected somebody to show up, but I can imagine, like, I understand he lost in the finals, but if you're playing red-white aggro, you do not want them to ever turn a permanent face up. Like, that is very bad, and that happening every single time a permanent turns face up seems like, you know, that's not really something that you can handle.
Well, one more thing about, like, the Whisperwood Elemental is I've been trying Azorius Heroic just because I had the cards and I could build it real easy on Modo. Whisperwood Elemental is a great answer for those Azorius Heroic decks. You can't throw color a manifest token, but I'm sure that's been said before through us. Is that a red deck wins deck down there? Three outpost siege. I love it. This guy playing. See, there you go. Jay, it's got all the goblins you want. It's all goblins. You told me that you would like a mono red deck if it had goblins.
I might have to build it. I might have to build it, to be honest. I do like the number of goblins for sure.
I'm a big
Wild,
fan.
Wild Slash, I think, is a card that Mono Red needed pretty badly.
All right, so enough about Standard. Tell me what happened in Tennessee. I heard it was a really sweet Modern tournament, and you guys were talking an awful lot about it before the cast actually started recording. So tell me about it. Tell me what you guys saw.
You're the only 10 I see.
Is Tennessee the French word for Vancouver?
Tennis. Yeah, wait, where did you get Tennessee from?
Oh, see, so, yeah, see, that's how much
I'm
I know.
I'm sorry.
Vancouver,
no, you,
Tennessee.
Vancouver in Tennessee, right.
Right,
my
exactly.
Bad.
Vancouver, Tennessee.
So I was thinking of the really small, the really tiny small one in
it's,
the
yeah,
Pacific.
Yeah, so it was actually 30 miles outside of wherever the other one was, and so players actually got to choose which GP they went to.
Oh, wow, how nice.
So good guy Wizards over here. Said, pick your format and go.
Oh my gosh.
So, my mistake. I thought the Modern tournament was in Tennessee.
So,
and the other Standard was in Vancouver.
So, I have one question for you guys. Is it bad when it's doing so good? Twin wins again. Are we going to follow the whole thing where everybody's going to be like, ban Splinter Twin? It's too good because it's winning too much.
I don't know what to say. I don't like Twin, so sure, ban it. It's too good. It's too IMBA.
No way. I think I like it. I like Splinter Twin. There's enough answers in the format. I mean, you can bolt a damn Pestermite. You can path to exile and it kills the combo. I mean, there's so much to disrupt the combo. And I think people just have to tailor their decks a little bit more to beat it. But I think that Splinter Twin is as close as we can get to a combo deck without ruining Modern. Now this Bloom Titan deck, on the other hand, I don't know. I don't like the way it's looking at me. We should ban it.
I appreciate your well-versed and carefully constructed argument as to why Bloom Titan should be banned. I mean, Twin is the great unifier. It's, since the inception of the format, it is almost like explicitly what they're referring to when they say the turn four rule. Like, when they talk about a turn four combo that kills you, they're usually referring to the one that, you know, flashes in Exarch and then casts Splinter Twin.
But, I mean, you're still seeing, like, a really healthy top 8. I mean, you have Junk, Infect, Bloom Titan, even Bogles, Affinity, and Splinter Twin. Like, any one of those decks could have taken it down. It's just that it happened to be Dan Lathier. He played really well. He did have a... Oh, man. He played one game against Junk, and it was bad. He had a... I believe he had a Pestermite and a Deceiver Exarch. Swung in with both of them. He was holding on to two bolts in his hand. His opponent was at 9 life or something. And instead of just letting the attack go through, he kind of like showed his lightning bolts to his opponent, which completely changed his opponent's play and made him slaughter packed. The justice wasn't there, and Twin still won. But I mean, I don't know. I don't like revealing cards like that. It's not good.
So, you guys were talking a lot about Twin and how much, I guess a lot of people think that it should be banned or shouldn't be banned, but what we were discussing earlier was that it had, this Twin won this event, and then it had just won the Pro Tour. What, do you think the power level is too strong or not? Because as it is, we have people already asking to take Modern away from the Pro Tour as a format to be played. Is it because there are decks like this that just win regardless of how linear or non-linear the format is?
Oh, Jay, do you want to go first?
Well, I think it's why people have repeatedly said you don't want EDH to be a format that anyone ever turns a competitive eye to, because it'll ruin that format. And I think that, you know, I love Legacy as a format, but, you know, Legacy is a if it doesn't have the kind of, like, Legacy has established itself as having, like, the robust support system to fight some of the new innovations, but we're not necessarily sure if Modern actually has the structural support to not fluctuate so much, because it's clear that, like, the power level of where Modern is at, like, where Modern is trying to be a turn four format, it's clear that that design goal is at risk to be, like, you know, disrupted by standard cards. And, you know, we saw that with Dig Through Time. We saw that with Treasure Cruise. It eventually happened with Birthing Pod. But it's definitely the power level that they're aiming for means that unless standard is boring and the cards are terrible, then it's going to be vulnerable to change. And I know that people, like, some people want that. Like, they don't want Modern to become stagnant. But, like, ultimately, the kind of, like, stagnancy, if you will, of Legacy, I wouldn't necessarily say it's, like, stagnant, but, like, its establishment is what makes the format healthy, and Modern is a format that, like, now in, like, our two major Modern tournaments since the bans, Twin has won both of them, because basically, like, this ban cycle was just, you know, like, reload your earlier save file. Like, you goofed. You made a bunch of terrible mistakes. You ran Lydia off the cliff, and then you're just like, none of this is going to work. We just got to, you know, completely start over. And so the two big Modern additions from Khanza Tarkir are gone, and then we wound up losing Birthing Pod as well. So this is the format back to almost as though Khanza Tarkir didn't even happen. And so now when you look at a lot of these Modern decks, you know, they're almost exclusively, you know, ignoring that, with the exception of, like, Tassigar showing up in junk, which is cool. The most powerful cards from the Khanza Tarkir block have been banned.
Do you think that at least, like, I think everyone can agree, I think Treasure Cruise was too strong in the Delver decks. But, like, in Legacy, they decided, I'm wondering why they decided that Dig Through Time should not be banned in Legacy, but it should be banned in Modern. Like, I just don't know what their reasoning, if it's that much better in Legacy than in Modern, or vice versa, you know, like,
I think what they're worried was that, like, if they explicitly stated it, they were concerned that Modern decks would just play Dig Through Time in Treasure Cruise's place and not have much of a loss in value. I think the thing that's odd to me about that was the fact that, like, people were showing up with Blue-Red Delver as a deck, like, yeah, that deck was consistency, and that deck rewarded you for sometimes even, like, sloppy play. Like, you didn't have to play really tightly when you could just, like, cruise to refill your hand. But, like, one of the big things was some people were actually excited about that, or Jeskai Ascendancy and Modern, because they were new. Like, the fact that it's for that window of time when everyone was like, the sky is falling and Jeskai Ascendancy is going to destroy Modern, people believed that, like, Modern could change. And then, you know, now, like, I mean, I obviously misspoke earlier. Like, the mainstay of Khanza Tarkir format in Modern is Siege Rhino. And I think that that's a change that it's cool to see that in, but I think that some people are less than excited about the Siege Rhino change, because Siege Rhino is kind of like now Modern's Bloodbraid Elf. Like, it's the determining factor of what direction you take your, like, really good rock shell. Like, now there's just, there was already good white cards, and so this is, like, the thing that pushed you over the edge. Whereas, like, previously, there were already good red cards you could play in Jund, and, like, Bloodbraid Elf is what pushed you over the edge. Like, it was so much better than anything else. So, like, I feel like now that the deck is solidly in those colors, I gotta come back to it. Like, I really, really like the PVD's suggestion of unban Jace and unban Bloodbraid Elf. Because, like, I would really like to see, do, you know, is there a dichotomy? Like, do people play Jund and Junk? You know, does one of them just, like, objectively beat the other one? But, like, I think that this is a format, it sounds crazy to say this, but, like, when I look at these lists, like, there's variety, but this is mostly, like, almost like aggro combo, 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 rock. I feel like this format needs our Lord and Savior, you know, Jesus Christ. Like, this format needs Jace the Mind Sculptor, is what I feel like when I look at these top eights. It needs control decks to have some card to just say, like, no, stop the madness, lay down your arms, and let me fate seal you.
Really? I don't know. I mean, I don't think that the format needs Jace. I feel like the format's very, it's so wide open and spread out. Like, if I was looking at modern decks earlier today on TCG Player and like the dailies and the other random modern deck list that I see for random events going on, and I see a lot of variance in the format. I don't think that either Twin or Abzan are too powerful to where it actually requires them to unban a card like Jace to just shake up the format so much. Because what will end up happening if they end up unbanning Jace is that everyone's going to play Jace. And then the format's going to be even more linear if people already thought that it was, because people are going to be playing Jace decks or the decks that beat Jace decks. So I don't think that would be good for the format at all.
I don't know. I don't know about that. I mean, right now it feels like you're playing Twin decks or deck that beats Twin deck. Personally, that's my experience playing modern.
It feels like you play combo or you play rock. That's what the
format is. If you play online, especially, like, there's nothing but Twin everywhere. It's just so bad.
There's a lot of mono red online. I was seeing that for sure.
There's a lot of Abzan. I don't know. I think the format's really healthy. We can't ignore the fact that in the top eight there's a bunch of different decks here. And I feel like it could have been easily any of the other ones. I just think that it's just that we saw Splinter Twin twice in a row. I think we'll be fine. I think the format's good. As a Splinter Twin player, there's a lot of answers to disrupt our combo. You have Torpor Orb and even Path does it mainboard and stuff. There's a lot of answers to the Splinter Twin combo. And I don't really feel like it's being oppressive whatsoever. If it was oppressive, I feel like I'd see six copies of Splinter Twin, like I saw when I saw six copies of Blue Red Delver.
I don't necessarily think it's that, like, maybe that individually Splinter Twin is oppressive. Like, obviously, there are things that interact with it. I just think that the way that the format works right now, it's very difficult for you to go compete at a major tournament and be successful not playing a turn four deck, if that's the, like, parameter of the format, or you're playing what is now Abzan. And I think that sometimes people can put up, like, reasonable results with the control decks, but it just feels like we're kind of far removed from, like, Sean McLaren, blue-white-red control. It's just Shahar Shenhar playing blue-white-red control. It just feels like more and more people are opting away from some sort of strategy like that because you just don't consistently win. And those people have either opted into just playing what is the de facto control deck, which is Abzan, or some variant of combo decks. Like, it's cool that lots of different turn four combo works, but I feel like that's a virtue of the fact that if your combo could consistently win before turn four, they banned your cards. They were either on the first ban list or the second ban list, or they've been banned since. And so you wind up with a lot of different decks that can kill you in the same time frame. And so because they're all kind of like non-interactive, I do my own thing decks, then they're all in some context kind of viable. And the fact that so many of them are viable, like, actually perpetuates all of their own existence, because it's really hard to sideboard against all of the different combo decks when, like, Infect and Tron and, like, Bloom Titan and Twin are just, there's, like, very little, like, similarity and overlap between their strategies. But, you know, if you let everything that can kill you on turn four is fine, then, you know, I just think that, like, I understand that, like, when we've seen Jace Mind Sculptor in Standard, we saw that, like, one of the archetypes was decks that play Jace. But, you know, in some context, like, they're, you know, we have an established archetype. Like, we have a rock shell that has kind of, like, existed since the inception of the format. And I think it would be interesting to see some sort of, like, different archetype, if you will. Obviously, like, the horror scenario is that it just becomes, like, the black-green shell becomes black-green shell that plays Jace. Like, I get that's probably, like, the worst thing for Modern. But I would like to see some other force that, like, push this format away from just, like, combo or rock.
All right, I feel like we're getting back into the discussion that we had last week, and I think that we're still kind of split on what we think about the modern format, which is neither good or bad. It just means that there's a lot to talk about, and I think we've talked about it enough already. So let's move on, and we'll move into the last tournament of the weekend, which was the standard tournament over in Tennessee. This one for sure was in Tennessee this time. So why don't you guys tell me a little bit about what you guys saw at Grand Prix Memphis from the coverage that you guys saw.
Was there coverage? I didn't see any coverage, but I can tell you from looking at this top eight that there's a ton of siege rhinos. There's probably like 32 siege rhinos in this top eight.
Good thing you didn't take the bet on this one, huh?
No, I didn't take it, but it's kind of worrisome. I mean, don't you guys think this is a little crazy that there's just too much, especially with Tastiger being added on to the Abzan, and
it's a little scary, dude. I agree completely.
And Ugin is like another real popular one that's just, it's so non-interactive when that thing comes down, and there's like, just nothing to do about it.
It's kind of like, do you play the Abzan deck or do you play the Boros deck right now? Like, that's kind of making me a little nervous. Because we're not seeing a lot of other decks. But, I mean, it could just be this Grand Prix. I mean, it can be kind of, I mean, the other deck lists on the other top eight weren't all the same, right?
Well, no, but, I mean, still, it's just crazy to me. I mean, part of the design space of this new concept is like, oh, we're going to make five clans. And apparently, three of the clans, they just don't care about. I mean, I think it's just weak of Wizards to be like, we're making Mardu like warriors and like aggro, but it's such a joke. None of the aggro cards they've provided are even close to good enough to get past Siege Rhino. So,
well,
I don't know.
Power creep is real. Like, Siege Rhino is just so good, and we talked about it before when cons first came out and we first started up the cast. Like, we totally called that Siege Rhino would be a game-changing card. And it has been, and it's even format-defining now, and it even is in Modern, too. And to your point, Jade, like, they included Tastiger, which just gave more fuel to these decks. They just said, screw it, man. Tastiger's so good, we're going to run 1x of that and take out all 4 Caryatids because we don't want to get screwed on Tastiger's ability. We just want nothing but value every time we activate Tastiger. So they're getting it. They're getting all this value. And Siege Rhino is just so hard to deal with because regardless of whether or not he's swinging at you, he's still draining you for 3. He's still Lightning Helixing you. And if you can't deal with it, then he's swinging at you and threatening a lot of damage. So I hope that this next set that comes out has better cards for the other clans. That way it shakes up the format a little bit, because I know a lot of people are getting tired of standard format already. So it's kind of good that they're releasing the sets quicker now, because they're kind of getting figured out a lot faster than they were in the past. And now it seems like it kind of needs to be a set release every so often. Like the time frame that they're giving for set releases, which is not much at all, seems about right for how quick people are figuring out the format. So we have less than a month before, or about a month before the next set, Dragons of Tarkir, gets released, which hopefully will shake up the format. But I know that right now a lot of people are not happy and they're playing other formats right now because they just don't want to deal with Siege Rhino.deck. So hopefully we get something good.
Yeah, it's gotta be clear to them at this point, and I'm sure, you know, they've already made all the cards. They haven't started spoilers, but, you know, they have a good idea, and I've gotta be thinking, like, they try to make Tastiger like, oh, he's the Sultai clan leader. But, you know, there's nothing that says you have to play him in Sultai, and of course, if the other cards in Sultai aren't nearly as good as him, he's just gonna get thrown in Abzan, so, you know. It's just madness right now, I think.
He's cheating. He's cheating on the Sultai.
Yeah, they're worried about...
That's a very Sultai thing to do, I think.
About limiting, you know, all the other clans, but they're like, oh, wait, in our haste to, like, nerf blue-black-green, we accidentally gave tons of stuff to black-white-green, so...
Tastiger's like, yeah, I'll lead you guys, Sultai, but I'm gonna go kick it with these rhinos for a little bit. These rhinos and coursers, they're having this party, and it's freaking amazing. So I'm going to kick it with these guys for a little bit.
Basically. That's exactly. He's a party animal. Look at his card art, and you'll see.
He's got bananas, doesn't he?
He's like partying right there. Yeah.
Yeah, with a plate of bananas.
Completely. Hasiger is definitely a twink, but it's worth noting that this top eight is affected by the fact that I believe the Abzan players were on the same team, which is why they're all playing very similar lists. Some of these people are on the same team, so like that's a facet. It's also good to point out that the rotation schedule, these blocks are on the faster rotation schedule. So Khans of Tarkir and Fate Reforged will rotate out before Dragons of Tarkir.
They rotate in the fall with the fall set. When the fall set becomes legal and standard.
No.
Right?
No. The Dragons is coming out, like, spoilers start next month.
Right.
So a full year from that in 2016, when that happens, that is when Khans of Tarkir and Fate Reforged rotate out. A year and a half.
Okay, I got you.
18
I got
months you. Instead of normally, like, for example, Theros won't rotate out until it's had 2 years.
So Theros will rotate out in the fall, but Khans will rotate out next spring.
Yes.
Gotcha. So, I don't know, that's kind of cool, I guess. But then we also have Magic Origins coming out too. Like, it comes out almost immediately after Dragons, so Dragons is going to be another one of those sets where there's not going to be a whole lot getting open because Origins is going to come out.
But if I understand correctly, Dragons is a large set.
Either way, like, it's probably not going to get opened as much as Khans was. Khans was, like, record-breaking for how much a product was opened.
I got to suspect that it's, you know, it's a large set. Yeah, there's going to be some stuff. Like, we haven't seen anything yet, but it's not, because it's going to be, there's going to be a time where it's in the format without Khans of Tarkir and Fate Reforged. Like, it's going to feel different.
Well, hopefully they reprint something good in Dragons that will cause people to open a bunch of it like they did with Khans. So I'm hoping Wizards actually reprints Fetchlands, Zendikar Fetchlands, and Dragons.
True name Nemesis and Dragons, calling it.
Okay. I will 100% bet you on that. I hope you're ready to lose another draft.
They also print Flusterstorm and Counterspell.
Yeah, and Flusterstorm.
Not happening. Neither one of those.
Quick little tiny leaders update. Kiln Fiend with Flusterstorm. Pretty awesome. That is all.
Huh. Okay. Well, I picked up some stuff for my tiny leaders. I was able to pick up some lands and a Goblin Rabble Master. My tiny leaders is looking very, very nice.
Oh, actually, I played in a tiny leaders tournament in Alamo.
Are you playing with different storm rules?
Yeah, he is.
You're
say
playing
anything,
with
but,
different
but he
storm
is
rules.
Definitely.
Okay, did I do
for those of
wrong?
Us who don't savagely cheat,
it puts stuff, it on the stack. It doesn't cast them.
It copies the target for each spell cast before it this turn. When you storm, you don't cast like 20 spells. You cast a spell and put like 19 copies on the stack.
I'm a savage cheater.
So but we knew that already. That's why we didn't address it.
Okay, so I swung with the Kiln Fiend. He tried to, like, smother it, I think, and then I Flusterstormed in response. He couldn't pay it. Doesn't it cast Flusterstorm twice?
No, it casts Flusterstorm once, and then Flusterstorm, if you read Flusterstorm, which you don't really have to, and I suspect that you did not, but...
Probably.
When you cast this spell, copy it for each spell cast before it this turn. So you cast one Flusterstorm, and then you copied one Flusterstorm because he cast Smother before you cast Flusterstorm. And so you have a cast Flusterstorm and a copy of Flusterstorm, but you have only cast one instant or sorcery.
I don't like it your way. I'm going to keep playing with it my way.
All right, fair enough. It's tiny leaders, so you get to play with, like, tiny people rules.
I am so sorry. I think it was DJ Tinney. I apologize.
It was probably your freshman friend.
So did you actually play in a tiny leaders tournament?
So chill.
I did. And
tell
it
me
was,
about it.
It was full chill.
What? Stop it. Stop trying to make that happen.
No, keep going, Adrian. You guys,
You stop
guys will
it.
Just
you
keep saying, like, oh, I don't get it. I
don't encourage
just keep
this
doing
nonsense.
It. Yeah.
Why don't you stop being the 55-year-old man you are, Eric, and learn to be a kid again? All right, man? I'm young. I get the kids.
No, man. I'm just going to chill with Tassiger, holding his whip, eating his bananas, and we're just going to chill at the Siege Rhino party, bro.
Oh.
You can keep being a kid with your Kiln Feed Fluster Storms.
Alright.
We're just gonna be chilling.
Okay. I'm assuming, this is clear to me at this point in time, that if you're using the phrase full chill, that you're referring to the General Kane classic in full chill, because that is the only reference to the phrase full chill on the internet.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Can I just ask what the popular generals were at the Tiny League?
Okay. So I actually was not able to play Nin because nobody has sent me a Nin from whoever listens to the podcast. Way to go, listeners. And Eric was kind enough to bring me an oversized Nin that I couldn't use.
Glad I could hook you up, bro.
But there was a lot of, well, actually, there was like no reprints. I saw a Shuyun. I saw a Brimaz. I saw the Goblin. From Commander, I saw Jaya Ballard. What were the other ones? What's the mono black one that's like buy things back from your graveyard? No, it's like an older one. I can't remember the name off the top of my head. But yeah, dude, there was like a bunch of different like tiny leader decks, all varying on like power level, which I realized quickly that I went into the tournament and my deck was just overpowered. I was playing, like, me and my group of friends are basically playing Legacy Singleton. I run Back to Basics, I run Blood Moon. I'm there to like lock out my opponent on like turn three. But yeah, and I don't know. I want to see where it settles at. I hope that Tiny Leaders becomes a competitive format because that's the kind of Tiny Leaders I want to play. I want to play a really aggressive format where I'm getting my creatures are getting abrupt decayed or I don't know. It was a blast. A lot of them didn't know that you could have a sideboard. You're allowed up to 10 cards in a sideboard. And that's actually where we ran into the issue was a lot of the EDH players that play there didn't agree with the whole sideboarding thing. They did not like that. So I guess we're going to see a big difference between like the EDH players that are coming in to play the format, and then you have players like us who want to play a different style of Magic.
Do the EDH players know that in EDH you can have a sideboard as well?
I don't think a lot of them do because they don't really, like...
All right, I have a question, because online, if you have an EDH deck, you can't. You can't put anything in your sideboard, so, like... Where do the rules break down between, like, what people say and what Wizards says and, like... Because someone is like, yeah, you can have a 10-card sideboard, and I'm like, you can? Because you can online.
It's casual, bro. Like...
Just chill, bro.
Just be full chill, want. Dude. Like, people that don't have EDH sideboards are no chill.
What the... Stop it with the chill.
Well, seriously, like, yeah, what...
You obviously haven't been listening to the song like? The whole time.
No, I haven't.
That's if obviously you, not something been, that Wizards...
You would understand.
So, a little behind the scenes for all you listeners out there, Will linked us to this song that he just talked about.
And it is the best song I've ever heard in my life, Will. Thank you.
This is true. Like, it might be the best song I've ever heard. I fully endorse Full Chill now. Like, yeah. Before I was a non-believer, but I have seen this... The, like, blow-up plant light.
How can this only have 4,000 views? 4,672. Everybody just go to General Kane in full chill. Type
we
it in
the link
YouTube,
in the podcast notes.
Change your life.
No, we're not linking it.
Yeah, we are. We have to. Let's take
yes,
a vote.
Yes, dog.
I vote yes.
Yeah. This song is legit.
I vote yes.
Stop it with
this
the votes.
Be,
I always lose all the
be,
votes.
The
I'm
legitimacy
Eric. I also
that we've
vote yes.
Been desperate for years.
Dude, this is the next Gundam style.
What? When did this song even come out?
I don't know, but it's the next Gundam style.
It's really hard to find because it's only on vinyl.
Oh my god.
Oh, man, this is great.
All right. I found
a new band.
Tiny Leaders seems like really fun. I'm glad to hear that there's players in the area actually coming together to have tournaments. So it's pretty awesome. I hope I can go one day to play Tiny Leaders.
I definitely recommend it. It was a blast. It was actually really, really fun and totally worth like the drive out to Alamogordo for it. So yeah, Tiny Leader tournaments, do them, have them, play them.
All right, so let's talk about a couple of the announcements that Wizards came out with. So the first one is that they are going to release a set called Tempest Remaster on Magic Online only. They claim that it's largely due to the fact of the popularity of Vintage Masters on Magic Online. What they did was they got all the cards in the card pool from the Tempest block and only put the best cards into one set and remastered them by giving them the new frame but not new card art and updating any Oracle text that needed to be updated. So these are cards that were played with that are really popular that are going to be non-redeemable and only, I guess, only legal in Legacy, Vintage, and of course Draft. What do you guys think about this? Is this a set that you will be looking forward to drafting or not? Or, you know, why?
I don't know. I never got to play this format because I didn't play Magic when this came out. I was only 7 years old. But is it the full set, like Tempest, Stronghold, and Exodus?
It's the full block, but they're only making one set out of it. So they're kind of removing the chaff and just, like, keeping the good stuff.
Wasteland.
Right, so they're probably going to reprint Wasteland. They're going to reprint, like, Capsize. They're going to reprint, like, all the good cards that were... That we liked from those sets and say, here you go draft it. Is this something that you're going to, like, do?
Forever and ever and ever, hopefully.
For as long as they have it.
Yes. Like, the opportunity to, like, it's obviously not going to be the same as, like, individual sets or the format, but, like, I think this is, a really, really good precedent to establish, and I would love to see them do online-only releases of, like, strong limited formats and to do this kind of thing, because sometimes that, like, time, like, to get into the time machine and play that limited format is sometimes, like, one of the coolest things that you can do. Like, I would love for, like, some point off in the future to, like, time machine to, like, play Rise of the Eldrazi again, and not just, like, flashback, but, like, maybe take, like, Zendikar block or, like, Scars block or something like that, or Innistrad block, and, like, just make it a better limited format and just only focus on the good cards. So you have, like, the reprints for online play, but you also focus on, you know, just producing, like, only a high quality, like, Masters quality or maybe slightly below that. But
those are all, like, a high new quality blocks. Limited format.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm, like, as a new player who's played those things, like, I don't have any experience having drafted Tempest, but, like,
yeah, but now
I could
you will.
See, like, right, but I mean, like, I could see why someone would want that with sets that I'm familiar and I've played a lot of limited in.
I don't know. So I think they're going to do it for great sets that were awesome to draft back in the day. Like, Invasion Block was awesome. Original Ravnica Block was awesome. I don't know. Like, there's so many other blocks that they could remaster to do, and I don't think that they're going to do that.
Kamigawa version 2.0. No.
I hope we skip Kamigawa. I hope we skip... Mirrodin block, the original Mirrodin block. Those were all bad. Actually, drafting Mirrodin was pretty fun, but it was just as horrendous as standard. It was just affinity or not. But, I mean, there's so many different blocks that they can do, and I think if the goal is to get players to acquire more cards for Legacy, because it's a lot easier to play online than it is in paper, then they're probably gonna do, older sets where the card pool is required to play that format. So I can see maybe they will do Rise of the Eldrazi because we need some of those cards, but not for a while. They're gonna do some other blocks, I think, first. And I think this is kind of their beta test to see how popular it actually is. But I don't know. I mean,
I'm not saying this is a block should be done now. I'm saying, like, off in the future. I'm just, like, I, of the formats that I know are, like, good limited formats, I think that, like, a best of limited environment for them would be awesome. So, like, if Tempest
is a really good limited format, then like this sounds like the kind of thing that I want to draft as much as humanly possible.
Well, I know that when it comes out, we're definitely going to stream Tempest Remastered on the Madness Fight podcast stream, for sure. And Will and I can pilot it, because this seems like a lot of fun. So let's move on to the other announcement that they released. It just came out today that they are going to be doing something different at the pre-release. Adrian, why don't you tell us what this game is?
So I guess from what I can tell, you basically throw dice and try to hit things. If you get points if you hit the TO, you get points if you hit the judge.
I don't think that's how it works.
Then I don't want to play this game.
It looks really silly to me.
It's
about as bad, or if not worse, than like opening the Ugin box. It's just dumb. It's not magic. It doesn't interest me.
But can we talk about how cool those freaking spin-down counters look? They're really cool.
Okay, so what they're actually doing is they're giving you an awesome spin-down in your pre-release box that you then get to use to kind of play bowling or whatever to knock down these pins. And you acquire points for whichever pins that you knock down. And as you knock these pins down, you then have an opportunity to win some extra cards that are like common, uncommon, or rare. The thing is like, I know a few stores already don't actually do the pre-release event, like unlocking the Ugin box or like anything like that.
Are they allowed to ignore that?
I mean, they do. I don't know if they're allowed to or not, but they just ignore it and then they just give out the Ugin packs. That's what a couple of stores have done. And I don't know, like, I would really appreciate doing the game and, like, having them unlock the box in front of you and be like, oh, we're almost there. It adds a little bit more fun to your pre-release experience. So I don't know if this is going to actually get store owners or stores to actually participate in these games, because you need to acquire these points, right? And you can't do it by just, like, marking off achievements on a checklist and then turning them in. You need to actually roll a dice and hit some stuff to get whatever it is that you're supposed to get. So hopefully they do it. I think it's worth trying for Wizards, because pre-releases have gotten a lot better. I think pre-releases are way more fun. My only gripe is that I'm tired of the boxed up pre-release and like the seeded packs and stuff. I just don't like that. I would much rather play normal sealed, but I can understand why they're doing it.
I agree with you 100%, Eric. I think the seeded packs just suck.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of those, but I like everything else that's going on with it. Like
the other problem with them is like, if they run out of the seeded pack you want, you basically don't get to play like what you want. Like I'd much rather just get a regular sealed personally, but that's a tangent.
But I think that has to do with us as Spikes. Like, that's what we want to do, right? We want to just play with how we would normally play in, like, an actual seal event, like a PTQ or PVTQ.
But that's the thing about these events, is they're not just for spiky players. They're for all the players, you know what I mean?
Of course.
And I think it's really cool, the fact that, like, Wizards is still giving us cool little things like this. I mean, even if some people think it's gimmicky or some people think it's just, you know, too cutesy. I appreciate the effort, and I'm glad that they're making it worth it. They're making it fun to come out. They're trying to try different new or different ideas, and I enjoy that. I personally really like it, and I hope that I go to a store that's actually playing the game, because why not? I like throwing dice at things, so sounds fun.
So we'll link this article in the show notes as well. They did make a change to the points and what it is that you can acquire. Earlier this morning when I read it, it read basic land. Like if you get 3 points, which is basically only knocking down one pin, you get a basic land. But if you, but they changed it. It doesn't say basic land anymore. It says land.
They meant foil polluted deltas, right?
No, it just says land. So that means that maybe there's potential to get fetch lands.
I think it's super telling that probably doesn't, like, because of their tiered ranking system, that probably does not mean, like, fetch land or anything, but it means that there is a non-basic land cycle that would have new art. Whether that's like, I think it would be really weird if it was the same land cycle again with new art, like again, but, that to me is like telling that like they put basic land and somebody's like, no, it's actually a, you know, other like common lands that so are not basics.
Like the gain life lands.
Yeah.
Not too happy about that. I don't know. Maybe I hope at least we get some tri-lands out of that.
I just would like to avoid the Ugin situation in the future. The Ugin thing, as a cube player and somebody who wants shiny things, well, I mean, I guess this one isn't actually shiny, but I'm not exactly happy about that Ugin promo being in, like, not even at every store. Like, that was kind of sad.
Yeah, but I mean, it is kind of cool because at the end of the day, this is a trading card game. It's a collectible card game. They got to make some stuff that's collectible, that's sought after, even now with the new stuff.
Right, but like...
Yeah, but it doesn't have to be Yu-Gi-Oh! Status. Like, yeah. There are cards that are rare, and then, you know, there's the Ugin promo. It's a little ridiculous.
The fact that it was not, like, guaranteed, I think, reminds me a lot of, like, the random Hell Vaults, where, like, it's so awesome, like... For those of you who don't know, like, Avacyn Restored pre-release, a very, very small percentage of the Hell Vaults were just, like, super Hell Vaults, and so you had foil Angel, the foil double Angel Demon token, and you got, like, Judge promos that were either Angel or Demonic themes, so, like, one store got Demonic Tutor promos, but, like, those things are awesome when you're the people that open, and I'm not saying, like, everybody should have them, but, like, they admitted after the Hell Vault that, like, they probably should have just normalized the pre-release experience and made it, like, kind of cool for everybody as opposed to just, like, insanely cool for those people. And then the people that don't experience that are like, well, now that I know that you did it, I kind of wish that you hadn't. Because, you know, the vast majority of people, like, a lot of people are not even aware of the fact that that occurred with Hell Vault because it was such, like, a small percentage of the player base that was affected by that. And, like, that's how they choose to use their budget. Like, Hidden Treasures were really cool in Zendikar, but there are a lot of people that don't even know that that happened either. So, like,
tell,
I think
tell
that
them about Hidden Treasures. Don't just say it.
So in Zendikar, a very, very small percentage of Zendikar boxes in the first print run had very, very powerful, valuable early cards from Magic just in the packs, and it was kind of to emphasize Zendikar's theme of like exploration and finding treasure. So they never formally acknowledged it. There's no formal acknowledgement that it happened, but it did happen. And, you know, people would open packs and there would be like a dual land, or there would be like a Candelabra of Thanos. Like, there were just crazy things like that in an incredibly small percentage of the packs. And right before Zendikar came out, there was a very subtle change to the rules for how you played limited. And the very subtle change right before Zendikar came out specified that if you opened a card in your pack and it was not from that set, that it belonged to you, but that you could not use it in your sealed pool, which was like a really weird addition for them to just throw that out there. And that's kind of like whatever formal recognition of Hidden Treasures it is. But as far as I know, Wizards has never acknowledged that they actually did it. And so sometimes they do cool things like that, but since they've never formally acknowledged Hidden Treasures, I don't know, like, what their stance is on it. But I know that they said after the Hell Vault that they would have... They realized after people's reactions that they should have just kind of made everyone's experience good, but not, like, some of them amazing. And I would feel that, like... I feel like the Ugin promo falls in the same thing. Like, if the Ugin promo had been at every store, then I think I would have cared less. But, like, if you're at a store where nobody got an Ugin, it was like, well, what was a big deal? Like, you didn't really care as much about that box if, you know, there was nothing available. And I think a lot of people were really excited about them. And then when they got these, like, really small three-card packs, I think that the excitement level, like, really dropped. And then, like, if you were at a place where there was no Ugin, then the excitement level just, like, fell to the floor. And then you were like, okay, that sucked.
Did you see the story or the YouTube video about the Fate Reforged packs, like the print run on Fate Reforged packs?
Yep.
So, that was kind of cool. Wizards hasn't acknowledged that.
I don't know. See, the thing about that one is I don't know whether it was deliberate or whether it was, like, a
a processing error.
Yeah. And so for those of you who don't know, what happened was there's a YouTube video out there from a store in Arizona that when they started busting boxes to sell singles, they started noticing that every single pack had a fetch land from cons in it. This was at Amazing Discoveries, so I guess you can still find that video on YouTube. And they were opening packs, and they stopped because every pack had a fetch land in it. And they started opening packs on video to show that they were opening fetch lands in every single pack in that box. So that was kind of cool, but Wizards hasn't acknowledged that at all either. But to your point, Will, like, we don't know if that was deliberate or not, and we'll never know, but I like to think that it was. I like to think that Wizards tries to give back to the player base sometimes, but unfortunately, stores got this one.
I mean, there were some, like, there were, I heard that there were people or, like, stores where they were, like, opening it. I'd like to, like, it would be cool if that was something they decided to do. But it's the kind of promotion that, like, could run awry. Like, the moment that it cropped up, that, like, that had happened at some point, the two big concerns I heard were if it's, like, a print or, like, a processing error, there's some concern that every box that has all fetch lands subsequently means that there are boxes that don't have fetch lands because of it. And I think that's kind of allusion to, like, early print run problems in Magic, where there were sometimes those, like, all rare packs or all foil packs or other weird things, and you also had the possibility to open, like, the all common pack or the basic land pack.
Yeah, during 10th edition, I played at a release where our shop actually got a box where the packs had no rares. So it was horrible. Like, everyone was opening their packs and there were no rares, so... Yeah, luckily, like, Wizards sent a new box to the store, and, like, everyone got more packs. But it was so dumb because one person in the store had a foil rare, and he was the only person in his sealed pool that had a rare at all because he had opened a foil rare. So it was just so dumb, yeah.
The other concern that people said about this was if you're, like, just how you mentioned that, like, a store did it and they opened them, if a store noticed that somebody had, like, opened a fetch line in the first pack, they might be more inclined to, like, check the second one, and then suddenly, like, if that was the fetch line box, then none of those packs got sold.
Yeah, that's true. So maybe it wasn't done intentionally, but I like to think it was. Anyway, let's move on to the last segment of the night. We saved the best for last for you guys. We got spike tips, and this one's actually, listener submission spike tip. So, Adrian, why don't you tell us all about it?
Why do you always make me do all the work?
Because you got the submission,
just
man.
Just do it, bitch.
Ah, fine. Okay. So, our spike tip for the week is a listener submission challenge. Did that sound super cool?
Nope.
Yep. Okay. Well, thanks, Jay. Raymond Lonergan have sent us in a message, and it says, "Hey, Mana Spike. Why is Adrian so cool? I really like Adrian."
You're a liar. Nobody said that. Okay. Nobody has said that ever.
You're right.
I didn't realize that your mom submitted a spike tip to us.
My mom thinks I'm great, okay? So.
But she messaged it to my account for some reason?
You don't say things like that. That's hurtful. Okay. Back to serious business. Raymond Lonergan submitted, "Hey, Mana Spike. I was wondering if it makes you a better or worse Magic player to make a homebrew. Is this ever a good idea, or do you guys just leave it up to the pros? Anyways, what I want to do is challenge you guys to play a homebrew or even a lesser played Tier 2 deck. Make something up with Standard, Modern, or any other format you play. Play it at a tournament and give us the rundown on the deck. Let us know how you do. Also, Adrian is really cool." And he's full chill.
He did not add that last part.
No, I didn't.
Okay, so
he knew what it was.
Let's address his question first. I'm just going to come right out and say it. I definitely just leave it up to the pros. They have more time to test decks than I do. Being that I have a family and a full-time job, I just don't have the time to test as much as I'd like. So I leave it up to them. I play what I think is the best. And I think I've said this before on a previous cast. I play what I think is the best deck, and then I just go with it. And then I just try and test other decks whenever I can. much like I did recently with Red White, and take it from there. So that's what I do. What about you guys?
Well, so the homebrew thing.
Homebrew every day.
Oh my God,
that's my life.
That's true, Jay. Yeah, you're right. I'll let you go, Jay. You're the homebrew meister.
All right. You got to homebrew. It's so fun. I mean, for me, okay, so part of it is, I guess this will change depending on, like, what type of player you are, but, like, personally, I love, like, deck building as a part of Magic. I think it's one of the coolest things about Magic is the ability to, like, select your deck from this massive card pool and just... The possibilities are endless, you know? So I think deck building is like a skill that some people forget. Like, they just net deck every time, and, you know, they don't view the deck and understand, like, that a certain card in the list is a meta call. And it's just, you know, I started the game making my own decks, and back then, like, I didn't really have any resources for looking up net decks or knowing what was good. If a friend told you about, like, a good combo, then you'd know the two cards in the combo, and you'd kind of have to figure out, like, the rest of, you know, what you want to build around that. So, like, my philosophy is I love deck building, and I don't get torn up inside if I don't do well in an event. Because I didn't net deck, and because it's homebrew. So I think it's a useful skill to have, and, like, really you get to understand your deck a lot more. And you never get those situations either where people are like, why are you playing that? And you're like, I don't know, it was in a net deck. You know?
I think there's a lot to be said about homebrewing during your development as a Magic player, especially if you're new, because learning how to build a deck is really important for other aspects of the game, such as Limited. But I think you get to a point to where you want to take things to the next level and be a little bit more serious about it. And so you want to start testing other established decks. But I do think it is important that at some point in your development as a Magic player, you want to begin by homebrewing. You want to begin by trying out different colors and see how the colors work and what the color pie actually does, and you begin to realize, oh, black spells do this, green spells do that, blue spells do this. And that's really important as you begin to understand metagames and deck choices that other players are running at big events. So I'm not completely discounting the fact that you shouldn't do it. I just don't think you should keep doing it all the time. But I will say, however, Jay, that Loam deck that we played was really sweet. I don't know if it's a net deck or not, but I like it a lot.
Jay's a
net
decker.
No, I actually made that deck myself, so.
Yeah, sure, net decker.
I seriously did.
He copied it from my webpage that has my decks on it. Has my net deck.
I have to put myself in Eric's camp here, but I have a slightly different analogy. I think that net decking is kind of like, I think of it as like Breaking Bad, right? Magic is addictive. So, like, in this analogy, Magic is meth.
Whoa, hold on. Do we want to go there?
Let me make the point. I know very little, admittedly so. I may fancy myself an expert, but I know very little about how to produce meth.
Did you just admit to being a meth maker?
I know very little about it. I could look at Wikipedia, I could fool around a little bit, but chances are, if I were to attempt to produce meth in my garage, I would blow my house up because I don't know how to do it. If I wanted to seriously be involved, I would go find... Like, I would go find Heisenberg. I would go find the serious expert, the scientist who would produce it, because I'm not going to take any risks with these, like, if I'm going to ingest it, like, I'm going to make sure that it's done seriously. So, like, Sam Black, like a deck builder like Sam Black, is like the Heisenberg of the like Magic world. Like Sam Black is the deck builder that Nox. He's the one that's gonna like produce that like high quality like blue crystal deck list that will win you a Pro Tour. And like what you don't want to be is like Season 1 Jesse, where you're just like, you've seen these people, you know that you've played against someone who's Season 1 Jesse deck builder. He's like, you're like, why is that card in your deck? And he's like, oh man, it's the chili pepper. It adds a little bit of spice to it. And you're like, no, that's stupid. Like you're playing blue white control. Like why did you like randomly throw in, you know, some card that has nothing to do with your strategy? Like, no, to take that out. Like, you're needlessly ruining the recipe. So, like I would say that, like, playtesting and the deck building is, like, in a confined laboratory setting. Like, all the safety procedures, you have your hazmat suit on, and you wouldn't dare take that stuff to a GP. But, like, in the safe environment, you can, like, manipulate the formula. But, like, if you're going to go out in public, like, you are going with, like, the industry-regulated, top-of-the-line, high quality stuff, and you do not endanger the safety of yourself at the Grand Prix and the people around you by bringing the homebrew.
I don't like the fact that you called Sam Black Heisenberg. There's no way that Sam Black is Heisenberg in this analogy.
Yeah, he made Aristocrats.
Sam Black is an amazing deck builder, and he's also like, he's so quiet and unassuming that I assume that when Sam Black is deck building, he is like violent, aggressive, and authoritative.
I really like the way he plays Magic too. Have you ever seen like when he's shuffling or he just like sits there staring at his opponent? I really wish I could do
Mike
that.
Mike Heisenberg?
No, he's not Heisenberg. I think if anyone's Heisenberg, it's Michael Flores. All right, end of discussion.
Yeah. All right. So I don't know. I have to say I have been the guy who's changed decks just a little too much, or has tried to figure out something and has messed up a deck. Will definitely is the guy that always tries to like stop me from doing that. But sometimes I've found some nice little things by doing that, and I think it's okay to play around with the deck and kind of see its potential. I don't homebrew when I want to do major tournaments. I don't try to come up with some weird Fauna Shaman Birthing Pod deck before PTQ. I want to play what I want to play. Like I'll pick my deck, and I'll try to read the meta, and I'll try to see if these cards have ever been played before, like in the deck. What role that card is playing? What's coming out for that card? Like what role did that card play in it that I took out to replace that slot? That's most recently is playing like Wingmate Rock. I'm a huge fan of Wingmate Rock. And I know that we had this whole thing about it last time, but I still think like I would play it. Or, Blast Standard when I put in, Purphoros in my, Jeskai Ascendancy deck. So I could try to basically get that extra reach against the Abzan decks. I think some testing like that was fine because I didn't go in completely blind just by throwing in like, I don't know, throwing a Shuyun into my Jeskai combo deck because I think that it would be fine. Like, I don't know, you gotta test it if you're gonna mess with it. But I wanna move on to what he said, the second part, the challenge. I did have a little bit of time to think about it, and I think I'm gonna try to play a black-white kind of aggro human deck, to see if I can maybe take down an FNM. It'll probably be something along the lines of 4 Seekers, 4 Bloodsoaked Champions, 4 Pantheons, maybe an Anthem effect or 2, a Tassigur, some Sorens. Maybe throw in some Raise the Alarms to give me some more value off that Soren. Probably not, though. And then just having a removal suite. So that'll be the deck that I'm going to try to hit Standard. And I'm assuming Jay will probably try to do Modern.
Yeah. I mean, I'm definitely down to do the challenge. I do it anyway, so... And I think, like, the question, like, does it make you a better player? Like, I don't think your play skill necessarily correlates to your deck-building skill. So even if you deck-build a terrible deck and you don't do well with it, like, I don't really necessarily think that correlates to your play skill. So that's just my opinion. But I'll definitely be doing the challenge, and I'll be reporting back what I can brew up. Maybe some kind of infinite combo, something fun.
Well, I mean, maybe if if homebrewing probably teaches you anything, maybe it's card, like, learning to read cards better, like, being able to understand value from different cards and what these cards bring, and for, like, limited formats and stuff, but I don't necessarily know that if you build a deck, it's gonna make you a better player. But assessing the power level of a card, I think you learn it through homebrewing.
Alright, so Adrian and Jay, you guys will take the challenge this week, and we will hear back next week from your tournament report. So hopefully you guys do well.
Thanks.
I already know Jay will, but Adrian, I'm looking at you. I hope you do well.
What the fuck does that mean?
I'm just saying.
I mean, the last deck I played was homebrew, and I went 4-1 in a modern tournament. So
boom.
Whatever, dude. I am gonna homebrew so hard that nobody's gonna expect it. Paintseer, hit my Tassiger. I'll take okay. 5. Hit them for 100. What's up? God, am I dexterous?
You'll
be
take
bad.
6, I think.
Yeah, are you? You just play. You have a very different set of Magic cards.
Mine are different. Didn't you guys see that picture earlier where the guy, some guy tried to trade another guy in Ulamog and it was like one mana less? Yeah, it's pretty great.
I want to see that.
Yeah, I'll try to find the picture again. It was on Facebook.
Alright, well, I think that it'll be good for us to take this challenge, or for you guys to take this challenge and report back to us and see how you guys feel about going into a tournament, and then even though it's not a big tournament, you're just going into like FNM with it, but analyzing the deck choice that you made and thinking about how different you would make it for a bigger tournament, if you would at all, and why. I want to hear what you see the differences in are between an already established deck and a deck that you just brewed up yourself. So I'm actually very eager to hear about it next week. But I think that's all the time that we have for this week. So just a couple of housekeeping things. Make sure that you guys follow us on Twitter. You like us on Facebook. Follow our Twitch channel, because we will be streaming every Monday and probably come up with some surprise streams during the week as well. And as always, make sure that you donate to the guys over at mtgcast.com, because they're the ones providing all this great content that you guys are listening to.
Yeah, support those guys. Those guys are cool as hell. I wish I would have been the guest on their podcast. Way to go, Eric.
I'm sorry,
no,
man.
No,
but,
I'm proud of you, man. Good job.
I think
I'm
sorry they care about, you know, like image and respect and stuff.
They like me. They would like me.
They don't know you.
Yeah, in my dreams.
Okay, so you dream about the MTG Cast people.
Network. I dream about the MTG Cast Network. I have a mad crush on everybody that's a podcaster here.
No, you have a mad crush on the network itself.
Yeah, mad crush. It's full chill.
Oh, God.
Eric, quit being no chill. Okay? So, Eric, where can they find you?
Well, everyone can find me on Twitter at MrE234, all one word. You can also find me every Monday on the Mana Spike podcast stream on Twitch. What about?
Where can they find you, Jay? I'm doing it, Eric. All right.
Follow me on Twitter at WolfgangAN, at WolfgangAN. And I'll entertain you a little.
And Will, where can they find you, sir?
On Twitter at HK Isn't Korea.
I forgot about that.
That is absolutely real.
Did you just like walk into it?
I forgot.
I thought that was why you wanted to do this.
Did you see that they started a poll like I'm trying to raise money to get Li Shi Tian to New Mexico? I'm scared.
Yeah, I mean, on the list of places that Li Shi Tian wants to go, I can only assume that New Mexico is really high up there.
I mean, if people raise the money to bring him, I'm sure he'll come just to beat you up, Adrian.
Dude, that's no fair, because everybody's just going to, like, hold my arms down while he hits me in the head.
Wait, is that no chill?
That's no chill. That is no chill.
All right, and I have...
You guys can find me... No, it's my turn to say bye.
No, you don't get it. You don't get any of that.
You guys can find me at Adrian Pi Bropez at AOL Instant Messenger. You can find me on Net Zero, and you can find me on the Mattisfied podcast and the Bedroom Casters, but I don't stream there anymore because I'm not allowed to. Nobody else lets me stream on my personal channel.
Did you say Net Zero? We just like throwing out like our AOL Instant Messenger usernames. You guys can message me on MSN, like my Neopets account. Like, how deep are we going into the rabbit hole?
You guys can hit me up on clubpenguin.com.
What even is that?
my Gaia dude, Online account.
It's full chill. That's all you need to know.
All right. Well, we will have some guests coming up in the future, so make sure you stay tuned for that. We're not going to announce them. We're just going to surprise you with them. So make sure you keep listening. And as always, give us your feedback. And if you want to submit any spike tips to us, you can do so via Facebook, Twitter, or email. And we'll have all the links in the show notes for you guys. So thank you, everyone, for listening, and we'll catch you next week.